Welcome to the Brew Drink Run podcast, brought to you by the only website that promotes brewing your own beer, consuming the best craft beers in the world, and then running off the calories, brewdrinkrun.com.
Ho, 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 Merry Christmas. Welcome to episode 174 of the Brew, Drink, Run podcast. My name is Lee.
And this is Keith.
I'm Raymond.
All right. Nice job, guys. If you like the show, please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you grab your podcast, and write a short review. Your ratings and reviews are going to help more people find this show. You can also tell a friend by posting about the show on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Tag us at Brew, Drink, Run. This is our big show. On our big show, we talk a little bit about beer. We talk a little bit about, you know, physical fitness, about the presidential challenge, how we can hopefully get up to those push-ups we're supposed to be able to do. And we talk a little bit about the world of homebrewing. But we do start every episode, no matter what, under any circumstances, with a beer. Keith, what do we have?
Today, we are having a beer from Orpheus Brewing called a Serpent Bite. This is a dry hopped sour ale. Comes in at a sturdy 6% ABV.
Not bad.
And looks like there was supposed to be a date on the bottom of this. It got very off-center and smeared. kind of is on the bottom ring of the can rather than on the bottom. So we don't know how old or young this is. But
well, you know what Orpheus says, off-center ales for off-center people.
Yeah, wait, no, that's not quite right. I don't know. That doesn't sound quite right.
Yeah.
But anyways, this is their I think year round for them, or at least as year round as can be. So not sure. There's no indication of any wild yeast being used in this. So I don't know if they kettle sour this guy or if it's just they use a blend of house yeast or black dough or something like that to get this. So. So it'll be interesting to get into this, see if we can maybe figure out what they use to make it sour.
Orpheus, interesting brewery. In the last one, I still kind of think of them as one of the new kids in Atlanta, but I guess that's not really the case anymore. You've got several who have come out after them, but a young brewery known for doing some interesting things, not just with a couple of sours that they have out, but then their double IPA gets a lot of love, and they have a wide variety that they're putting out.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, I know I've written a review or two about them and talked about them, but their whole, at least original mantra is we are going to make beers that we've never seen before. Yeah. So they're not interested in putting out the best the best English style porter you can. You know, that is not what they care to do. They want to push an envelope and whatnot. I think that, sometimes it comes off as, almost an arrogance, but at the same time, they generally back it up with interesting, high quality things. So I can accept, that balance of things as long as the product's good. I think that you should be proud of what you're doing and how you choose to do it. So I say good for them. I haven't. They're up in Atlanta. I haven't made it. Have you guys been to the brewery?
I haven't. Yes. No. I don't know if they have. I mean, I assume everyone has some sort of tasting room experience.
Yeah, they do. As far as I know, I just hours are so sporadic with the way the laws have been here. Soon to change, but they've been so sporadic. Every time I'm up in Atlanta, which is a few times a year, there I'm always like, oh, I want to go to that, but I've got other personal things going in the hours that they're open or they're closed today.
It'd be fun to check out what they're doing and see what they actually are putting out in the tap room too. Because, like you said, my experience with Orpheus is very similar. The beers they put out are always very interesting, always very good. So I'm excited to try it. Raymond, you brought this one to us today. So tell us a little bit about the can and what made you pick it up.
What made me pick it up is that I've been looking for beers for my wife, Ashley, to have around the house. And she has developed a taste for sours and saw this one on the shelf. And it's dry hopped. I thought maybe that would be a way to introduce her. She doesn't particularly like IPAs, but maybe a little bit of both there.
A little hop dosing.
Yeah. Work your way towards it. A little bit here and there. Yeah. And she did like this, so... We're drinking her beer right now, but
nice.
As for the can, like all of Orpheus's cans, they're kind of sparse in their graphics. They're white with very kind of limited writing, very structured. Most of their beers have a color coding to them that's indicated by a band along the top rim. But all of them have these wonderful, very fluid drawings up mm-hmm. against a white contrast. And this one is, I guess it would be, well, it's a female figure with a snake wrapped around her, and her hair is kind of flipped forward and kind of mimics the curvature of the snake.
Can you talk a little bit slower?
Can I talk a little bit slower?
Yeah, so she's like a female figure, right? there's a snake, right?
Well, a snake.
What's that snake doing?
it's entwined around her.
Yeah. Welcome to BDR After Hours. Yeah, this does have a kind of a different vibe than some of the others. I mean, the others, you know, the ones I'm thinking of have like dragons and stuff. maybe like a hand or half of a face, but this is more figural in some ways than some of those others, maybe. I don't know.
And very referential to the brand. A fateful right. serpent bite was the catalyst for Orpheus's epic journey to recover his beloved Eurydice.
There you go.
Yep.
That's what we're talking about. Poured this out into some glasses for us, and it's really, really lightly colored. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that color, Raven?
Urine? I mean...
Oh, wow, okay.
We're just jumping right in the deep end.
Man, I might have gone lemon yeah, golden lemon, maybe, wow. But yeah, all right.
Jeez.
Yeah, it is a
and
color.
Each of us have a little different. Mine's cloudy.
Mine is...
I think you got the last of the can.
A little cloudy, not a lot cloudy. Keith still looks clearer than mine, looking from across the table. But I think we can tell where we all got our pours from maybe a little bit. But yeah, Keith looks the clearest for sure. It looks really viscous, looks really thin. Very, very light hay, straw color, urine. I think we established that. What about aroma, Keith? What are you getting on the smell of this beer?
It's definitely got tartness to it. I mean, you just said hay and straw, and so now I'm smelling that. I don't know if that's just been planted in my head.
I'm so sorry.
Yes. I mean, as for dry hopping, there's definitely a nice kind of floral thing going on there. I wouldn't say that it's particularly hop forward for a dry hopped a sour ale, but it melds really well with the tartness. So that kind of nice, kind of light.
How would you describe that tartness? I mean, it's a little bit of a cherry-ish. I mean, or what's the association? I feel like with a lot of these sours that we talk about, sometimes they can kind of be in this weird zone where there's not a straight corollary. It's like tart in flavor anyway. It's like tart without a flavor.
This but says the sweetness going through. It's sweet tarts to me.
See, this one isn't. I get candy, but I almost get more like lemon heads kind of that kind of thing is what maybe what I get. But I mean, I think I always find it interesting because I feel like I smell sour a lot of the time in beer, but I don't feel like sour is. I mean, it's a weird thing to describe when you're talking about smell. You know, like there are certain things that are sour that you know, but sour is more of a sensory thing in the taste. But I think about beer and sour beers. I go, I can smell it. Smells sour.
Speaking of, you go ahead and taste it. I feel like now would be a good time to let the listeners know we just had some chocolate chip cookies. So our chaser for this is this the sour ale that we just had. Really nice gluten-free chocolate chip cookies. They were really nice.
Yeah, we're good.
And now we're having something that is, in all possible ways, it's perhaps polar opposite. Yes.
all the gluten we didn't get, we're getting now. Definitely get a sweet tarty type thing in the taste of this one. That kind of dry but sweet kind of candy tartness.
And the lemon, I feel like, is still a good way to describe
lemon's
some of this.
Good. I also get almost like passion fruit tropical kind of
mango,
thing.
Mango's
a little sweet. I think it's more of like a little bit tartar kind of fruit like that. But like some kind of like almost like stone fruit a little bit. You know, a little
like the acidity of you might get from a pineapple juice or something like that. But again, not as sweet as that. It's interesting. I like this. I like what it's doing. My first sip was a little bit strong, probably in no part to that cookie business. but it's really growing on me, and I like the way the kind of center of this beer is and the flavor through. You do get some of that sweetness, and you do get that tart pull. And I feel like it's a really nice little nice combination between the two.
It doesn't. It, you know, a lot of times you see a beer like this, you don't expect it to be intensely sour.
Right.
You know, I assume this is six pack, four pack, something like six pack. So you know, you think, okay, well, it's going to be, you know, a little bit more drinkable in that sense of like a Berliner or something like that. This really brings quite the sour punch. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's pretty strong.
It really kind of makes, I mean, you talk about that jaw clench. It's giving me that for sure.
Oh, really?
I don't feel like it's one of those things. Well, if you had two or three of them, you might start to get that little acidic, you know, thing going on in your tummy. But anyways, my tum tum is all clenched. but I like it. I mean, it starts out so incredibly pungent, and then it just kind of dries out, and it has that like kind of little fruity sweetness on the back end. So as an idea of a sessionable everyday sour beer, I think it works.
6%, right? Is that where we're at?
Yeah, 6%.
So yeah. I'm a fan. Brayman, you've had this now a couple of times into this, and you wanted to share it. And is this kind of, are we hitting the same kind of notes that you and Ashley have shared when you've had it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what's interesting to me is I got that clench too. And you know, I did that first sip. It's not after that.
And I feel like I'm super prone to it. But maybe it's more of a cherry thing for me, or maybe it is a different kind of frequency on this. Yeah. Because I feel like on beers where you guys haven't, I had. Mm-hmm. And so maybe I just have
complex. This to me gave me that sort of clench you get like when you first have like a like yellow grapefruit, you know, that first bite is like really hits you. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's even got a little bit of grapefruity flavor going on in it to me. And it's that kind of it's the acidity of it, not necessarily the tartness or that kind of thing. But
I'm having an allergies thing too. I wonder if I'm like a little like desensitized.
Yeah, I mean,
that could very well be possible.
Yeah,
but it's cutting through. Like I'm definitely enjoying the flavor here, but I just may not be as attuned to all the nuances. Well, we're not drinking Serpent Spite or other amazing beers from breweries like Orpheus. We are running off the calories that we are burning off the calories or. Just absorbing all those calories and taking them in, baby, from all those beers that we're drinking. Raymond, what are you doing right now for your physical fitness, for your presidential medal? What are you doing? You doing those push-ups? Can you do those sit-ups?
No. I've been painting walls and building buildings and and like I think we talked about this on the podcast, the last podcast. Did a big hike not too long ago, which was a lot of fun. Did a little over 30 miles in a couple of days. And up in the mountains in South Carolina, it was a lot of fun, and tried out some new camping gear and all that good stuff. So I've been keeping busy, but nothing consistent.
You've been hauling kegs and cleaning stuff and
cleaning kegs, lifting kegs, filling kegs, filling cans. I did buy some new running shoes the other day.
Sweet. Oh, nice. Score. What'd you pick up? Same kind of
brand? I don't know. I just needed... Mine were falling apart. I went to the department store and they were on sale. So nice. I got myself... They're more for everyday kind of walking and stuff like that. But but hey, at least I have a pair of running shoes. So if I felt like going to run... Mine had gotten so bad. It was like the soles of them were just foam.
Yeah.
There was nothing left. Yeah, it was just all gone. And I had run a few races in them over the course of time. And Emily was like, what are you doing? You're getting a chance. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I'll get around to it. So,
well, you know, a lot of people actually log their miles with their shoes. I mean, so they know, you know, how many miles they run in them. Runkeeper now even has a thing on their setting where you choose your shoes. A lot of people rotate shoes out or, you know, have different kind of strategies for that. For me, it's usually been like a 2 year or when I can kind of see the wear on the treads and I feel like it's just time that I'm probably not getting the support that I need. For me and what I've been doing recently, I've got probably 5 to 7 pounds I still want to get off. I took a chunk off. So we came back from Costa Rica and I promptly gained like 12 pounds. So I cut that in half, and I'm working on that last bit, but it's been hard, and especially just not doing a lot of distance running, which I just don't want to do. You know, sue me. I don't want to do any distance running right now. So I've been trying to run, but I'm having a lot of joint pain, a lot of that knee kind of old man business, especially in the knees that I'm getting with my running. So I haven't been able to expand that into longer runs. So my strategy now is at least 30 minutes of getting my heart rate up, you know, 30 minutes of active, engaged exercise every day, which is really stinking hard to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 minutes is not long, but actually making yourself go out, and if it's a short run or if it is cycling or if it's whatever, you know, if it's out paddling or whatever I'm trying to get out and doing, it's hard just to make yourself go do that. But so far, so good. On like 2 weeks of that now. We did, you know, a lot of family stuff this summer. And so it's nice to settle back in. School starting up. Your BDR weather forecast. It's hot. Today was not as
today
hot.
Was, no, today was nice. Yeah, it was a beautiful. And for not even August to have a weird end of July.
81 like, degree day.
Yeah. And, I mean, it was I think tomorrow morning too, next couple of mornings, supposed to be in like the mid to upper 60s. And yeah. That's unheard of in the summer here. So after this, so when you'd hear this podcast, go back in time and get out there and run, because it was a nice morning.
Yeah, make sure you get out in there and run, you guys. It'll be great. I promise. If we're not drinking good beer, if we're not burning off those calories, we are making our own. I'm super excited that I've got to try, and you can find a review of this up on brewdrinkrun.com when this podcast comes out, of SBC3. This is the third anniversary beer from Service Brewing that mm-hmm. Keith had a big part in. You pitched this beer, right?
Or yeah, we kind of got to the point where we needed to come up with ideas. So Kevin, CEO, boss man over there, he said, everyone go do your homework and come up with ideas. And you said you wanted a three involved in the process. So some people did. Some people kind of threw things together at the last second. So I was thinking about it for a while, and me and the family went out to dinner, and it was like a Cuban restaurant, but they had a tres leches cake as a dessert. And I said, well, this is delicious. And we had ordered some. I think my parents were in town, so they were inclined to get dessert for our daughter. And I was like, I like the flavors going on here. So so I came up with the idea of basically, I mean, we're not really calling it that, but the idea that is it's based on the flavors or that you get out of tres leches cake. So it's a wheat wine. It was kind of the base beer I thought would be smart. And you know, we ended up putting honey and vanilla bean in there to sort of emulate some of those sweeter notes, you know, using the malt bill to kind of hopefully get a little bit of that cakey type flavor going on. So although I didn't build the recipe, you know, Austin is our brewer, and it's his recipe. So he took my idea, my vision, and turned it into a beer. And I think he did a hell of a job. It's great. I think it's one of the better beers that we've done. I'm thrilled with it. So
cool.
Hopefully people like it as well. You know, it's one of those styles that's kind of known, kind of not known. So hopefully it sells well. I think it'll keep for quite a while, and get out there and give it a try. It's delicious.
Yeah, I'm going to be picking up a couple of other bottles to hold on to just to see. But super smart. Tres Leches 3.
Yeah.
It's a smart idea to do that. And again, you're right. The wheat wine is a style that a lot of beer nerds probably know, and yep. know that there aren't a lot of options for it. There are a couple yep. of breweries who will regularly produce one, but there aren't a lot of them out there. And I think that is a very accessible style yep. for people who are kind of coming into it too. Yep. It's not super aggressive. And with this kind of a beer too, this anniversary, a celebration, you know, modeling off of a dessert, that yep. sweetness, that kind of party atmosphere, that's great.
Yeah.
All in all, a great idea.
I thought just to point out, we, you know, mentioned, you know, some people from Southbound had come in for under various occasions, or other brewers from other breweries, and we'd be like, oh, what are you doing? What are you working on? We're like, oh, we're doing our anniversary. We're like, oh, what kind of beer are you doing? We're like, wheat wine. And they're like, oh, cool. You know, it was like always this, I mean, I think a lot of brewers out there, people in the industry want to do them, but it's sort of like one of those lost styles. It's sort of out there and people kind of do them. There's a handful of famous ones, if you will,
sure.
you know, but, But yeah, everyone was always like, ooh, good idea, or yeah. You know, that was sort of like the on the inside of the industry, a lot of people were pretty excited to hear that that's what we decided to go with. So yeah, I'm proud of this one. It's a good beer.
Yeah. Well, count me as one of the ones that are excited too. Our Dog Brewing Company is coming right along. I had a chance to preview the brewery and its build out yesterday. Our Dog is currently, if you're following along with the process of Our Dog Brewing Company and Raymond's build out of his brewery in his backyard, don't listen to this, City of Savannah officials. This is totally on the up and up. The drywall is up. It's like watertight. The roof's on. We're missing the floor and some paint and some AC.
Paint's in, dude. Yeah, as of today, paint's in.
So we're really close. We're really close to brew day number one at Our Dog Brewing. They've been working out some logo concepts for that. Going to get that website launched. It's going to be a lot of fun. Have you decided what the inaugural Our Dog beer is going to be?
Wheat one.
Great.
Son of a...
Done.
I'm going to base it on flan.
Let me just say, I'm really excited about Our Dog Flan. I feel like that's the future of wheat wines. I am on board. I am fan number one for this. So excited.
Now I got to do this.
Yeah, no, totally. You are in 100% on this. I can't wait to try it. With your brewing setup, I mean, are you going to look to moving to all grain, or are you going to try to do a couple of, extract batches?
I'm seriously thinking about going all grain. I got to start over again, I might as well start with the good stuff.
And insurance will pay for it, right? So go all
totally.
They don't know what you had.
You know how much grain I had before this storm?
I'd like to remind Raymond's insurance company not to listen to this episode either. Oops, did that a little late. I'm sure it'll all work out perfectly. Don't worry, Our Dog. And for me, yeah, I'm at some point I will do something. I'm sure of it. I actually was thinking a lot recently about brewing some other sodas. I did this years ago and really enjoyed doing it. The kid enjoyed helping, and we enjoyed them a lot. So I think that might be the kind of thing that sparked to get me to get excited again, is doing something that my daughter's into and can help with. And then, hopefully it'll go well, and I'll be like, well, I just really need to just do this on the regular.
It's been a few years since that.
The cream ale that she did. Yeah, that had a unicorn drinking a beer in a lounge chair by a pool was the label art she made. It's pretty great.
It was pretty good.
So, yeah, we need to get back on that. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Maybe we'll do a root beer this time, or maybe even something just totally weird, just like an orange.
Fletcher and I did a root beer. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, exactly.
They exploded, but it was good.
That's great. That's great. All right, so we talked about running. We talked about athletic endeavors. We talked about homebrewing. We've had a beer. This first segment just needs one more thing to make it perfect.
And what about reading? There's a leisure time activity that will help you learn things you'd like to know about many subjects.
Raymond's Book Corner.
If that laugh doesn't make you smile, I don't know what's wrong with you, because it's a glorious thing. It's the time of the show where we turn to Raymond's Book Corner to get recommendations on books that no one actually wants to read. So why not have Audible give you a free download of an audiobook and let someone else read it to you? That's right. You can get a free 30-day trial from Audible, audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. But if you do actually like to read, you can go to brewdrinkrun.com, take a look on this episode's show notes, and you will find a link to buy the book from amazon.com. If you do either of those things, audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, brewdrinkrun.com, click on this post link for the Amazon link, we get 78 cents. Hey, Raymond, what is your pick for this week?
Well, this week I have a book that I've read a couple of times and listened to as an audiobook as well, and I'm now reading to my kids, and that's Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton. A couple of years ago, went through a Crichton phase where I just kind of picked up everything on the book on the shelf that was his and listened to those. Had obviously read it back when it was kind of big and popular before the movies, and decided my kids were old enough to listen to it at least. So we've been slowly working our way through that. Interesting thing about this one is that the book and the audiobook are a little different. Because in the book, there are lots of little scientific graphs and charts and those sorts of things. And they kind of worked around them a little bit in the
So what you're saying is people need to do both. They need to go to audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun, let someone read this book to them, and they need to buy the book so they get the benefit of the graphs.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
For people who may have only seen the movie, and I imagine there are a lot more people probably that have seen the movie than have read the book, what is the... Is there a lot of difference between the two? Or, I mean, do they... other than maybe just take content out to make it fit in a movie timeline? Or is there anything majorly different? Say you've watched the movie, you haven't read the book. Why should they read the book?
Oh, it is different. It's a different pace, I think. And I think the characters are a little more developed in the book than they are in the movie. The kids are very different in the book from the movie. I think I like them a little bit better in the book. They were kind of came off as a little annoying in the movie, but it's Michael Crichton. It's a fun read. It's not like it's high literature or anything. It's just you sit down and you read them and you have a lot of fun going through these kind of crazy situations that he puts his characters through, and you have a good time reading them.
There you go. Brewdrinkrun.com. Click on this episode's show notes. Get yourself some Jurassic Park. Audibletrial.com/brewdrinkrun. We'll be back. Maybe. Yep. Yeah, we'll be back. Hey guys, we are back. Welcome to part two of our episode here on our big show. We're gonna drink another beer. Can you believe it? We're gonna drink another beer, and we are gonna talk about it. Keith, tell us what you brought for round two.
All right, we have the Cosmic and Divine. This is a collaboration beer from Burial Brewing and Jay Wakefield. So these two kind of nerdy craft beer companies got together and came up with this beer. It is an Imperial Stout with caramel, pecans, chocolate, and sea salt. So I believe the idea is kind of salted caramel for this. Obviously, there's a little bit of kind of extra stuff going on there, but I believe that's the idea. 10% ABV on this, so Burial Beer Company and Jay Wakefield. So there you go. Two well-known craft breweries. Well, I don't know. Jay Wakefield maybe isn't so much. They're
right.
I guess I know them well from just being in tune and in touch with a lot of things going on in Florida. But they're down in the Miami area. They're have a really solid reputation down in Florida. I'm not sure how much they actually distribute outside of even the local Miami area. But I think some of the nerdier beer nerds are definitely aware of a lot of what they're doing.
Raymond, the can that you're holding from across the table looks like it shares a lot with some of the other Burial can designs that I've seen, but I'm not super close to it. Tell me what the label's like.
This is a really fantastic label. It is very kind of comic book, modern comic book like, very kind of fantasy realism, but is a turtle with mountains and waterfalls and trees on its back, kind of floating through space, it looks like. And it's pretty great.
I like turtles. with the other, a lot of the other Burial cans I've seen lately, they're 16-ounce cans.
Yeah.
And they have, and again, I'm sure all of them don't, but I know a lot of them will have art on both sides.
Yeah.
Which kind of confusing.
Yeah. I actually picked this up from the brewery.
Okay.
So we got to Asheville. I think we talked last week a little bit about me making a trip, and this is one of the breweries we went to. They didn't have this beer on tap. You could buy cans of it there to drink in the tap room. But I was a little bit surprised When I picked it up, it was a $16 4-pack, but they were 12-ounce cans. And so I figured, well, I was like, all right, 16-ounce cans. It's a collaboration. It's 10% stout with a lot of stuff in it. All right, I'm $16. I'll bite. I'll take a chance. And I was surprised at the 12-ounce size, since everything I'd seen from them, as far as I've seen, has been in 16-ounce cans. So that was a little bit surprising. But yes, I think most of their can artwork, they have two distinctly elaborate designs on each side of the can.
And this seems to have a lot more color than some of them too.
Yeah, and it's not as dark. I mean, there's usually lots of, you know, I mean, it is Burial Beer Company, but it's, you know, lots of skulls and bones and kind of cryptic, slightly morbid, you know, stuff that they have going on most of their cans. It's really cool looking. I mean, I love their art. I'm not sure if they have the same person who does all of the art, but it is very similar. So I'd have to imagine, if not, they're at least coming from the same, you know, group of artists or something like that. But this one is, and those are the two things that surprised me, the size and the fact that not only was there only one piece of art, but how different that artwork really is from, I mean, it's very cluttered, which, when, you know, you say it resembles what they do. I mean, there's a lot of detail in their art. So that yeah. definitely exists in this piece of art as well. But yeah, there you have it.
Poured into a glass. I'm not going to make Raymond do this. It's dark. No lights passing through it. It's a dark.
I don't know. There's kind of like a caramel.
Well, I guess if I do, I mean,
around the edges, it's more of like a caramel brown.
You're right.
You know,
almost like a colon, somewhere around the edges. But it's very dark. You know, there's not light passing through the body once it's poured into the glass. Around the edges, for sure, you do get some. But it looks fairly, it doesn't look super sludgy. It doesn't seem like it's going to be too terribly thick from looking at it. Do you think? I don't know.
I've had it. I'm not going to answer.
You're
going
to ruin me. Yeah. All right. Aroma on this. I get a little bit of dark fruit on the aroma, like a little bit of a figgish sort of thing.
I can see that. I definitely get the caramel in this.
Caramel.
Yeah, that comes through.
I think that pecan comes through too.
Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Maybe. I like the aroma of this.
Yeah,
it's kind of big, rich, and sweet. I really like those notes that come out on the nose here.
Big, rich, and sweet can also be used to describe the flavor of this beer.
Oh boy,
it's what, 10% in some of this beers?
10%.
10%.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's very, very sweet. I don't know that it is necessarily hot, alcohol wise. Maybe a little bit.
This is the third time I've had this. I brought one can to work and shared it at one of our meetings. And then me and my wife each had a can of it one night, and then brought this one here. And this is the first time I've particularly noticed the alcohol heat. Yeah. And I don't know if that's just a correlation to, you know, drinking the sour ahead of time or something like that, but I'm definitely noticing the booziness on this this time around. But the flavor profile to me really, really captures that kind of both the caramel and the salt. I get that little salty note in this, which I find the most interesting thing. It's a big, sweet beer, but it's that little kind of saltiness and a little bit of nuttiness that's in the flavor, I think really kind of help balance this out a little bit flavor-wise. And it ends on a little bit more of kind of a roasty, bitter chocolate note, which helps kind of balance out the beginning sweetness.
Burial getting a lot of beer nerd love of late. Keith, you reviewed their Skillet, the Donut Stout, recently on the website. People can go there and read that. Read a deep dive on that beer. But it is, I think, where we are, just a beer that has more, a brewery that has recently shown up and that we can see. But there's something about how they're branding themselves and the types of beers they're doing. I kind of, in my head, just equivocate them with some of like what I remember Evil Twin doing and stuff like that. Sort of this kind of idea of kind of big, interesting, different things.
Honestly, it's hard to say. I haven't had a ton of exposure to Burial, and I feel like I've heard and known about a lot of their stuff for so long that I had. And I think I went back and kind of looked, like when I first started picking up their beers locally, because they did suddenly there was a big influx of several of their IPAs and stuff like that. I'd had like one beer from them, and I thought, I was sure I'd had this or that, or maybe I've had this before. So And then we were talking about the artwork. Then it became confusing because you're looking at art and then the can's turned around and you don't know if you just picked up that one and put it in your mix six or not, you know.
Right.
But yeah, they're doing a lot of kind of big IPAs. But they're, you know, they have that Saison, which is real nice, the Keeper's Veil or something like that. Anyways, they're... But yeah, apparently there's barrel-aged versions of some of these beers and that kind of stuff, and I think they're kind of beer nerds are nerding out on that.
I think by correlation may come in how they name some of their beers, too, more than that. Yeah. They've got their Surf Wax IPA, their Bolo Coconut Brown, their Skythry IPA, but like then you get into the Keeper's Veil honey beer, yeah. the Thresher Coffee Saison. The Massacre of the Innocents. But then you get the really evil 20 word ones where like, I left my wallet in a Bed-Stuy juice bar. Like when you start naming your beers, things like that, it's a little different. And that's actually canon available, folks. You can actually go buy, that's not a brewery only thing. That's something you can go out and actually get. So kudos to them for being able to be creative with their beer naming. I think, though, my favorite of these is I Know for a Fact You Don't Party, which is a collaboration they did with the Night Shift. So, you know, again, pick that up in cans, folks.
That's a beer you can actually find.
But the beer that we're having is really good.
Yeah.
It's another quality beer from these guys. And like a lot of collaborations, you kind of want to know more. Like, you know, who was it, one brewery's concept, which, you know, it looks like, I'm guessing from the canning and everything, it was done at Burial.
Yes, it does say on there that it was brewed and packaged. So that it was, we actually, Service recently did a collaboration up at Revelry.
Right.
It was our first one. And, you know, we didn't really do all that much, if you want to know the truth. Basically, this is Burial, and they probably talked about it a little bit, maybe ahead of time, came up with a few ideas, and maybe brought some of the specialty ingredients or the hops to contribute. But that's really, really about it. It's kind of one of those things where mostly the visiting breweries sit around and drink beer and, you know, and shoot the shit with the brewers and talk about brewing and what they're doing and what you're doing and how it's different. And the, you know, the actual brewers kind of nerd out, and then the cellarmen kind of go, oh, blah, blah, blah. What are you transferring today? You know, I mean, it's kind of the way that works out a little bit. So it was a lot of fun when we did it, and I'm sure this is mostly Burial's influence, and I think they reap all the rewards, you know.
All right. When you're looking at this beer up on Beer Advocate, there's not a ton out there about this beer, really. There are 6 ratings and 1 review on Beer Advocate for it right now. There are obviously a lot more check-ins on the Untappd. Mm-hmm. There are about 1,000 check-ins on Untappd, and almost all of those are from this month.
I think I had just come out when I was up there. I think it was brandy new. I was surprised not to see it on tap, and it even made me think maybe they're going to do like a tap release of it, you know, after we were even there, but they went ahead and, you know, put the cans out or something. So
not a lot out there on it. It's interesting to see when you're pulling this beer up on Brewdrinkrun. Yeah, pull it up there too. But when you're pulling it up on Beer Advocate, when they have their other beer style examples, you know, they always kind of pull from some of these a great, big, amazing, highly reviewed beers. So, you know, you're looking at for the Imperial Stout category, stuff like KBS and The Abyss and all this kind of stuff. But in a very weird way, this beer really does fit in that category with some of those bigger, crazier beers. While we don't have barrel aging and we don't have the salted caramel, but we don't have a weird ingredient thrown in or a coffee or something that's necessarily super strong, I feel like it kind of deserves a place in the class of talking about that same style of beer, where a lot of Imperial Stouts I have, I'm just like, I'm not even going to consider that being a comparison. And it's not the same, but I feel like you can talk about it in the same way you can talk about those beers.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it, these days, what ends up in that conversation, it's almost, I mean, there's obviously a lot of quality, but it's kind of luck. Are enough people who can make a fuss about this going to get a hold of it and make that fuss about it and have it blow up into a thing that everyone's got to get their hands on? Or is it just going to quietly sell out of the tap room and, you know, maybe go to a couple of local stores in the Asheville area and be enjoyed by people, and that's the end of it? But this is a... I was happy that it was as good as it was after spending as much as I did on it. I mean, I took a blind chance on a very expensive beer, clearly, without having a chance to try a little bit of it first, you know, at the brewery or something. Well, I guess I could have bought a can of it, but, you know, I was like, I'll take a chance. But I was really impressed with it. I really like how it's not typical in that Imperial Stout style. That the caramel flavor to me is so big and intense in this. I think it just makes it stand apart from just another quality Imperial right. Stout. I mean, I roll my eyes when I say that. I mean, it's not fair to some a lot of breweries out there making great Imperial Stouts that no one even gives the time of day to, you know, for whatever reason. But I really like the way the combo of flavors come together in this. And I think, you know, if it got lucky, it could turn into one of those next, like, oh my God, I have to have it kind of beers, you know?
Well, like you're saying, it's a beer that has a chance to move into that conversation and to do that. But this being a collaboration, does that hurt this beer's chances of having that sort of thing? I can't think of another collaboration beer that we would is like one of those top tier beers that people have in any kind of individual style. I mean, there may be like you said, a one-off that people like, but it doesn't happen to get into that class.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of a collaboration beer that people talk about hunting down and having to consume. Yeah. And I think that a lot of people go into collaborations expecting the worst or expecting... And I think I kind of do this sometimes too. I buy a lot of collaborations because, I really like all these, you know, these two breweries or these three breweries or all these guys are great. I want to see what this is all about. But I often feel like the collaboration is, it doesn't bring the best of both of those breweries to the table. It just gives you a kind of diminished combination of those two things, you know, those, mm-hmm. you know, this brewery does this really well. This one does this really well. And then they both don't do that really well and make kind of an odd beer. Or you throw too much in it. Like you make a beer that has whatever's lying around the brewery because you don't know really what you want to do. Come up with it that morning before you mash in and go, what do we got? Well, we got this. So then it becomes like a hodgepodge of stuff. Now, sometimes that might work out really well. And sometimes it's not. From my own experience, the beer that we made with Revelry was kind of a relatively simple beer. It wasn't super complex or high ABV. It was kind of a sessionable, hoppy kind of saison meets IPA kind of thing. But it was still, again, I'm describing it in a way that is kind of, you know, we weren't just making an IPA and we weren't making this. We were kind of, you know, making something up as we went along based on what we both had to bring to the table. So does it hurt it? Probably a little bit. I mean,
I think the big thing is that these collaborations are usually one-time things. So if you don't get it that one time, you never have a chance to try it. Well, it's not something that comes out.
Right. But I doubt there's anything in this that if it didn't get a huge reception that they couldn't do it again.
Right.
It probably wouldn't involve anyone coming up from Jay Wakefield. And there might be some legal situations to go, look, this is some money. It's going to be our beer or that kind of thing. But you don't, usually it's a one-off thing. You do it once and that's the end of it. More than likely. I'm sure there are exceptions to this rule. This is just going off of the top of my head.
Well, the only collaboration that I could think of that happens on a regular basis isn't really a brewery to brewery, but it's like Woot Stout, you know, where you have the couple of principals who come together and make that beer and it comes out on a rotating schedule. But it's not the same as Stone and Dogfish Head doing a beer.
Well, they
every
did that
year.
Saison de Saison Buff, de Buff
but several times. Victory. They did do it several times. Yeah. The three was Victory, the third.
Victory
the
third. And those have come out again being done by the different breweries a second time. So it does happen.
Yeah.
I think the general rule of thumb is collaborations are fun, but... Mm-hmm. You know, buyer beware. Practical. Don't if you see Firestone, Walker, and Founders working together on a beer, don't necessarily expect the individual quality of those things. But this is proof that that's not necessarily always going to be the case. This is an excellent beer, and The two breweries should be proud of what they came up with.
I agree. This is definitely worth searching out.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're a local Asheville person and you're into beer trading, put this out there, or you know how trading goes. You fill it out with, well, I got this and it's really good. And I was really kind of looking to try that thing you have there. I mean, this is a good one to have on hand
spreads.
For trading. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's an interesting mix. I feel like with the 10% ABV, I feel like it's still light enough body to drink. It's not super heavy. It's not super thick and syrupy. It's at a nice middle point.
Yeah.
The salted caramel, you do have these really interesting highlights. It's not a one note thing at all. I like the format that it's in a can. You know, mm-hmm. how many, even now with the prevalence of canning, you know, stouts mm-hmm. are just one of those things that people still do often reserve for bottles. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's a nice little package. Anyway, let's turn to what the real experts have to say about this beer. The internet.
To beer or not to beer. It's time for Beer Review Theater.
I mentioned there is not a lot about this beer on the internet right now. There are a ton of, or relative, 1,000. That's not really a lot in Untappd world. Check-ins to this beer, people who've had it. Those reviews are typically, as you would expect from Untappd reviews, super short. Things like, that's really good. 4.5 caps. You know, I would agree with that. That's really good. Great stuff. 4.5 caps. Mm-hmm. There is one review on Beer Advocate. It's not a funny beer or funny review. It's just a straight review. Mm-hmm. And so congratulations to D. Braunice for being the review we get to read this week, because he is the one. I was even just casting a wider net, looking other places, blogs, trying to find stuff about this. The only other things I found were really just regurgitations of the press release or what's on the can. Yeah. Not a lot of personal thought about this. D. Braunice has a nice little hand-drawn sketch of himself. Dude with glasses, mm-hmm. short-cropped hair, and a kind of tightly cropped beard. It's not me, I promise. His avatar is far more attractive than I am. D. Braunice gave this a 3.83 out of 5. A look of 3.75, a smell of 3.75, a taste of 4, a feel of 3.5, overall 3.75. 3.83 out of 5. Let's see where his subjectiveness comes from. Looks like a really nice guy. I hate to do this, but... Appearance! Poison opaque yet steel clear, jet black in color with moderate amounts of gentle active visible combination rising slowly along the edges of the glass and moderate dark cocoa brown colored highlights. The beer has a finger tall fizzy foamy tan head that quickly reduces to a small to medium sized patch, a very thin film, and a very thin ring at the edges of the glass. Light amounts of lacing are observed. Smell. Slightly stronger than moderate aromas of roasted malts, with slightly heavier than moderate aromas of caramel and lactose sweetness. Light to moderate aromas of dark chocolate and toasted nuts, pecans. Taste. Up front, there are moderate to strong flavors of roasted and caramel malts with slightly stronger than moderate amounts of caramel and lactose sweetness. There are moderate flavors of both dark and milk chocolate, as well as light to moderate flavors of toasted pecans. Finally, there's a light flavor of earthy hops and a light to moderate amount of roasty bitterness, which lingers slightly on the finish. Mouthfeel. Slightly heavier than medium-bodied with moderate amounts of carbonation. Slick with a light to moderate amount of alcohol warming to the finish. I like the word moderate. Overall, while this is a very enjoyable beer, I'm a little disappointed because I had extremely high expectations based on the style and breweries involved. Drinks pretty easily considering the strength. Can't taste or smell the alcohol. With the sweetness, this one is a decent after-dinner or dessert beer.
He sounds slightly smaller than moderate sized by his voice.
Why did this guy get the Mickey Mouse treatment?
I don't know.
Yes.
Who can explain things? Not me.
You got to do something.
Look, life just happens, bro.
I think he totally, I think we just nailed the conversation we just had. And that last sentence is, I had higher expectations based on this is a really nice beer and I like it, but because of the people involved, it didn't exceed those very high expectations. He didn't. I think if either one of these breweries had done this beer on their own, and he tried this beer, he would have been like, "Fantastic! It's great." I just feel like that there's a little bit of a bias that goes, especially with people who consider themselves nerdy experts in beer knowledge,
present company included. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's totally nails the point we were kind of trying to work out earlier.
Yeah. Looking through the Untappd reviews, I mean, it's averaging over four caps, 4.23, 4.25 caps for 1,000 check-ins.
That's actually pretty good because, yeah. I mean, it's, There is always enough people who just want to be, I mean, there's, you know, it's the internet, it's full of trolls, and people are going to troll good things just to bring them down.
And that kind of check-in nature of Untappd, it doesn't encourage you to really put a lot of thought into what you're saying.
You have one sip, I don't like this, you know, and then, you know, then it'll win an award at GABF, and you're going to go back and get it again and change your opinion. So,
but the reviews on Beer Advocate have been more critical, a couple over four, and then some mid threes on this. But
see, I think mid three is exceptionally harsh. I don't know what it is you thought.
Right.
A beer brewed with things that they clearly tell you what's in there and that you can obviously taste. I think that's a little harsh, but
I do too. I think I put this squarely in the 4 out of 5,
absolutely.
I feel like it's really high quality. I feel like I'm getting something that's very interesting and something that, quite honestly, I haven't had in this way before.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's becoming harder and harder for people to do without being extreme in some way, like putting mm-hmm. some completely random fruit I've never heard of in it or mm-hmm. whatever, mixing genres in a way that's probably not acceptable. But this to be a relatively traditional imperial stout, mm-hmm. I feel is excellent because it does introduce a couple of new things. I like the mouthfeel on it, and I like the presentation and the taste, of course, the most important thing. So
agreed.
I say good work. Raymond?
Agreed.
Sweet. All three of us agree. For more about us and how we agree all the same, go to brewdrinkrun.com. Follow us on Twitter at brewdrinkrun or on Facebook at facebook.com/brewdrinkrun. Also, follow us over on Instagram. Find some pictures that I just take of 6-point cans in my backyard because that's how I roll. Plus, we're all on Untappd. If you want to be a part of the show, email us at team@brewdrinkrun.com. Let us know about your home brewing, your running training, or your favorite place to grab a beer. Instead of emailing us, just call us. It's easier for everybody. 781-76-DRINK, 781-763-7465. We've got our Brew Drink Run t-shirts. We've got our technical running shirts available on our website. Click on the store link. Our theme music is provided by our friends at Morning Lights. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you in Asheville because apparently that's where all the cool stuff is these days. And why wouldn't we want to be where the cool stuff is? So cheers.
Cheers.
Raymond, why haven't you drank this beer yet?
I'm enjoying it.
Chug.
Savoring.
Chug. There's a mysteriously large amount of beer left here.